102.3 FM and 106.5 FM, located in beautiful, sunny
Southern California.
All right. And we're also in parallel with Turfs Up Radio Studio in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And you can find them at Turfs Radio, turfsupradio.com. So thanks for tuning into the Water Zone this evening. And hope everybody's having a great week. Chris, you having a great week?
It is. You know, it's a little bit windy up here, right? I mean, yesterday it was like tie your mother down windy, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, wow.
They had to almost bolt the door shut at work
because yeah,
they were flying it, open it was
yeah,
so much.
Yeah, the north-south side of the building there had a big sign out that said, use other door, please.
Yeah, and then you go to the other door and it says, use other door. You keep going back and forth and back and forth and back and forth.
Oh, well, they get me okay. It's the push and pull ones that mess me up.
Yeah. Whoa, that sounds good.
Yeah, that's good.
So are we adjusting volumes here in the headphones?
Yep, yep. So great show tonight. Hey, we got the IA spokesperson on there for
government affairs.
For government affairs,
John
yeah.
Farner. He's going to be calling in all the way from Virginia.
Yeah,
Virginia. So he's going to be like 9:30-ish his time, and yep. And his kids will be asleep, and his wife will be in bed, and he can talk.
Yeah, it's all right. We'll call him early in the morning. Wakey, wakey,
eggs and bakey. Yeah, we can do that. But somebody who's on our time zone, and who is the wonderful purveyor of Maven's Notebook, the all about water person in the world, and especially California, Miss Chris Austin.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
We're doing great, Chris.
Doing
how about yourself?
Hey, I'm not too bad. I'm up here in Sacramento.
Oh, very nice.
Yes, you know, I was attending the California Irrigation Institute conference in here in Sacramento on Monday and Tuesday, which kind of somewhat depressingly is as old as I am, because they said, you know, what year they started in, which happens to be the year of my birthday. They're like, yeah, you may not know what that year is. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I do.
Did you see all our buddies up there?
Yeah, I saw Inge. I sat on a panel where we had an interesting time discussing different views on things, you know, so it was kind of fun. And I, you know, tried to not take a position because I'm in the business of not taking a position, but then, of course, taking some positions and denying and telling them that if anyone said I took this position, I would deny it.
So well said.
No, I mean that's what a true person reports on stuff. They have to be objective and fair, even if they don't agree or disagree with somebody. So you're doing the right thing. What was the most important? Oh, go ahead.
Oh, well, I was just going to say, you know, it's kind of like, it's not that I don't have opinions and thoughts about these things, but I don't run my website in that way.
Of course not.
I'm about diversity of opinion. So, you know, shock and awe. I do actually can formulate an opinion, but, you know.
No.
But I do not run my website in that manner.
No, you don't. And that's why everybody adores you and loves your website, because it gives straight upfront information, and that's, you know, you provide the facts, and then anybody can decide what they want to do with those facts.
Exactly.
So we appreciate that.
Have you been up there all week, Chris?
Yeah, and I head into the Bay Area tomorrow. I hung up here in Sacramento because it's frankly cheaper than the Bay Area. but yeah, I head down there tomorrow. Because on Saturday I'm attending a water law symposium, which is an event I attend every year. It's put on by six of the law schools that are located here in the Bay Area and in Sacramento. I think it's like five in the Bay Area and one in Sacramento. But these six law schools get together every year, and they host this symposium on a rotating basis, and each law school comes up with a panel, and it's really it's always an interesting thing, and I'll certainly be covering many of the panels that they'll be discussing. One of them that I'm kind of interested to hear is on, they talk about raising Shasta Dam, and there's a lot of issues with raising Shasta Dam, and I could fill up the next, 20 minutes talking about them. But one of them is that if they raise Shasta Dam, it's going to further flood out what is considered sacred Indian land for the Winnemem Wintu tribe that lives up there along the McLeod River. And this is actually, you know, a pretty significant issue, I think, for people in the area, notwithstanding the fact that, you know, Westlands would have to finance a portion of this and everything that that means. And so anyways, they're having a panel where they're going to discuss this project. So I'll be interested to hear that and cover that on my blog.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting. I know, I think I mentioned to you last time, we're going to have a statistical seismologist on the show to talk about problems and things that you can have when you raise Shasta or anything else with the weight and what it does to the Earth's crust and things of that. So that's going to be an interesting thing. What was the biggest takeaway that you got at the CII?
Well, you know, they talked a lot about Sigma, and you know, it's interesting to hear how.
Can you tell our audience what Sigma is? I mean, because some people listen.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, you're fine.
You mean,
we know what
people
it is.
People may not know.
Yeah,
I
right.
know Sigma. We all talk about it. Yeah, it's more than just the Greek symbol. It's the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act.
Right.
And this is probably the most significant piece of California water legislation to be passed in, some would say, back to 100 years. And it's mandating sustainable water management, groundwater management for all the, you know, most important groundwater basins in the state. And and implementing this is actually huge. And we're coming up on this big deadline on the 31st of January, where all the, there's 21 groundwater basins that have been designated as critically overdrafted, or in other words, in bad shape, and they must submit groundwater sustainability plans to the state by Friday evening. So we're all looking forward to seeing what these critically overdrafted basins are going to do. But I'll tell you what is a really interesting story that's developing is that they're having a big problem down in Ventura County. And I haven't been able to, like, phone up on all the details of it, but there's been an issue there with the Ventura River and the water users in that area. And there was an instance where the city of Ventura decided, all the way back in September, apparently, that they wanted to adjudicate that basin. And what that means is they filed with the court that they wanted to have their rights, you know, determined by the court, their rights to the groundwater and the water in the Ventura River. And in order to do an adjudication, you have to notify all the water users in the basin. And so they did that, and that would include a lot of homeowners who are covered or get their water from a water district. But they all got these notices in the mail, and they, you know, that told them they had to pay $500 to buy into this lawsuit. And it's quite amazing what's going on down there.
Oh.
So I'm sure we're going to hear more about this. It's just starting to come out into the papers. But, you know, there's a big question of what you do with the groundwater adjudication in a basin that is submitting a groundwater sustainability plan under the, you know, Groundwater Management Act that was passed. So theoretically, it's not supposed to hang it up, but it's going to be very interesting to see how this plays out.
Well, it's always something else here in California, but I'm sure every state has the same sort of or similar type issues that they're all dealing with.
Well, you know, the reason why we have so many issues with water in this state is because the state is so incredibly plumb. There are very few rivers, actually, I'm sorry, I believe there's only one river that has no dam on it from headwaters to its outlet, wherever that is. And I think that's actually the river that's in my area, the Santa Clara River. It actually flows from the mountains in L.A. out to the Santa Clara, out to the ocean, I'm sorry. And there's no dam along it. But that's like the only one, the last untouched river. So because of this, I mean, there's more than 1,500 dams, I think they estimate here in California. It's like there are so many hands on the plumbing on all these rivers that it's just really difficult. People want to use the rivers for all sorts of things. And these are good things, and these are things we want. I mean, the people in the San Joaquin River, in the San Joaquin Basin and in the Sacramento River Basin, I mean, they're growing food. They take water out of the rivers to grow food that feeds us here in California, feeds us in the whole nation, right. and indeed the whole world. And it's an important food source, and people have come to depend on it. And you just can't, you know, decide to take that away. You know, and we need water in the rivers. Don't we all want healthy rivers with salmon and fish and places where we can go to relax and recreate? And we need water for the cities because we all live in the cities, you know. But it's really hard to figure all of this stuff out. But it's, you know, because there are so many people with hands on the spigot, so to speak. And that's why it's so difficult here. And we are unique in the nation, because I do not believe that there is any other state that is so completely plumbed as California. We can move a drop of water from the Oregon border to San Diego. And I'm talking this specific molecule of water can actually make it there. So,
do you think that the people are willing to change? Because, I mean, this whole thing about what you just laid out is true. We need water for food. We need water for this and that. Do you think the people fully understand the need for having water and that there's no more water available? You know, we keep recycling the same water over and over and over again. I mean, you know, they come out with all new things like atmosphere, water harvesting and stuff.
Same water.
It's the same water. To me, it has to be a whole mindset of people willing to change to make that happen. Otherwise, one day we won't have this around.
It'll happen when it hits your pocketbook.
Well, yeah. But I do think we're moving towards that, because people are starting to understand that if you want to get what you want out of these ecosystems, whatever that is, water or fish or whatever, you have to collaborate. And the only kind of solutions that are ever long-lasting are the ones where everyone comes to the table and they work these things out. And they're difficult conversations, but they really need to happen. If you don't do that, then what you get is, you know, lopsided actions that don't benefit everybody, and somebody litigates, and, you know, things start getting bogged down. If you want to do something and make something happen, you need to bring in both sides of the aisle. And the non-water example that I give, because it affects me personally, is just think about health care and what happened in Washington, D.C. The Democrats passed a health care bill that the Republicans didn't buy into. So as soon as the Republicans got into power, first thing they did was take it out. So if you want to have a solution that's going to be long-lasting and get something done, you have to bring in both sides. Or in California, it's not just both sides, it's all the sides.
Yeah.
And you get everybody to buy in. And people will start to understand that what the alternative is litigation and nothing really happening. And so they start to understand that it's in their best interest to sit down and negotiate. Maybe they don't get everything that they want, but they might get something.
Sure.
I don't know if you can confirm this, and I may be mistaken. I thought I heard a week ago something about the city of Santa Monica and the water, that they were going to raise the basic level to like $100 and something a month. Is that...
Well, yeah, you know, I don't know. I didn't see that story myself. But I will say, you know, Santa Monica has tried to take the green approach, I guess is the how I would describe it. If you think of Santa Monica, you probably wouldn't be surprised. These are people that are very environmentally conscious.
Right.
And so they have tried to set up a system where they say they're not going to bring in any imported water. But I actually personally find this a little puzzling because they're right there by the coast, and they don't have a lot of options for water supply. So it's great if they can not, you know, bring in imported water supplies, but what are they going to do? So they've been doing these other projects, which are great, but, you know, projects cost money.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, yeah, and I think, you know, but to be honest, I think we all need to start to understand that we're going to have to pay more for some of these things because it's getting more expensive to supply water to cities as it is to supply power to cities and natural gas and other things. I mean, these costs, I think, are just destined to go up.
I just still can't get over my belief that it snows on the East Coast and up north, and they have pipelines for oil, but why can't we have pipelines for water to come across the country or something? I mean,
money.
Well, but it's money anyway. I mean, you know, they'll either raise the rates this way or the other way. At least you have a chance of obtaining a supply of water instead of just paying for the little less that you get.
Yeah, many of the guests we've had on the show have all said that the price of water, not just in California but all over the Southwest, especially, right, is subsidized in ways that we don't even think about, and we really don't pay the real price.
No, we don't.
No, and I mean, you got to be honest. You know, what area has an abundance of water that they're really willing to ship it out? And then the other thing is that however you ship it out, that's got to cross land somewhere. And same, you know, with water pipes as with electricity transmission lines. I mean, desert power, solar power is great, but you got to bring that power into the grid. And that means, you know, electrical lines crossing the landscape, crossing people's properties, going by their houses, and maybe they don't want that.
Right.
You know, I mean, there's a cost to shipping things distances, you know, and not everybody is appreciative of that canal or that, you know, power line transversing their property.
I think they call it eminent domain. where they come and take your money.
Yeah, well, I think that we really need to stop thinking about, you know, we need more resources. Where can we bring them in from? Because the truth is, I think a lot of all these places, you know, that we bring things in from, a lot of them have their own growing population.
Sure, yeah.
They say, maybe I want my water here. I mean, I think we need to start, you know, being serious about being efficient with what we have and looking for, you know, increased resources in our own regions and not looking to these other areas, because it does impact other areas when we take resources from them.
Yeah. In your meanderings around the state, do you think there's any agency that really has a grip on knowing what the top three issues to maintaining and collecting water, and that has a really good idea of what we need to do?
Well, you know, I mean, that's really hard to answer because, you know, there are different factions. I mean, you know, we have the Metropolitan Water District down here, which serves half of the population because half the population lives, you know, south of the Tehachapis.
Right.
And they're very forward thinking in the urban sense. You know, they had ample groundwater reserves during the drought so that we didn't really severely suffer when we had to cut back our water supplies. We did pretty well. And there are other regions in the state that did well, too. You know, Santa Clara, where San Jose is, that water agency is very forward-thinking. Orange County Water District has really been a front-runner in using recycled water and
yes,
you know, have and managing their groundwater basins well. I mean, there are, you know, and then there are areas in agriculture that have done really well in managing their water, and other areas maybe not so well.
Yeah.
It really depends on what the focus is of your agency, you know, and each one has a different one. So it's really hard to say, is there any agency that has a loss on the top three? You know, I don't know, not any one agency. And we're all trying to figure out where the Newsom administration is, you know, trying to set their priorities.
Yeah, where are they going
to
fall
obviously,
on that? Right?
Yeah, they said, you know, safe drinking water is one of them, and they passed the law. But, you know, now we're all trying to figure out what does this water resilience portfolio really mean, and, you know, and where are we going with this Delta Conveyance project? And, you know, we're all trying to figure that out.
Yeah, so I'm just thrilled, absolutely, Chris, that you mentioned the Santa Clara River when I was in high school. This is a long time ago, right? So I had a friend who lived in Fillmore, and we would actually fish the Santa Clara River right there through the Santa Paula Valley. I don't know if you can still do it today, but...
There's not a lot of flow because, you know, well, my city pulls some out and all the farmers pull some out, and what's left in there is not much. And but they're working on that too. You know, there's people that are interested in restoring that river too. But yeah, I do believe it's the last undammed river in California. And if there's one that isn't, then someone will probably surely... one of our listeners will probably surely tell us. The next closest thing, I believe, is the Cosumnes River in the Sacramento area, and it's just a small river that, for whatever reason, never been, you know, doesn't have. I think it has some dams on it, but not a lot. But,
yeah.
You know.
No, I think the Santa Clara might have a weir or two, but that's it, right? It doesn't.
Right.
Yeah.
Nothing that stops it. Flow.
Yeah, no, nothing for permanent storage, right?
So, no.
So in the Whittier Daily News, right? I was one of the things I love about the new website, and by the way, you can tell people about that here in a couple of minutes. Your new website, but the CEO of the LA County Business Federation is trying to, you know, look at water from a historical perspective and focus on the future rather than on the past. Did you happen to read that article?
Somewhat. I have to commit. I have to confess. I was moving by quickly, but
you're out of town. Yeah. But it was
yes.
Yeah, just just interesting to hear her talk and your perspectives of herself and other former state engineers and going back whatever it was 100 years or so, right, or more. And telling this story. And so I don't know how right that is. I mean, you know, you learn by history. So you got to have a forward looking focus, but I mean, you know, counting all your apples as all your ungrown apples on the tree. You gotta go back to history and get to learn some lessons.
Absolutely.
Yeah. There's lessons to be learned from history. No doubt. But what we're facing with some of these things with climate change is going to be unprecedented. So I think it's important to learn from history, but also to be realistic about what's coming at you and trying to figure out how you're going to deal with it. Because some of these things we've never you know, there we've never seen it before. So, you know, we're gonna have some interesting times coming up.
Absolutely.
You know, we'll see what happens with this winter. Hopefully we'll have some decent precipitation. The snow survey today was it's a little bit lagging, but that, you know, again, it's still somewhat early in the season. It's the beginning of February, and we need just a handful of big storms to, you know, do a big deal. But if no big storms come through, then, you know, we may find ourselves, you know, kind of needing to be a little careful in the next year. So we'll see.
Right. Absolutely. Right. We're coming up against the station break, Chris, but why don't you tell people about the website?
Yep.
Hey, new website. Best thing about it is it has a link to the Water Zone podcast.
And it looks beautiful.
Yes. Well, thank you. I did it myself. That's what $45 buys you.
Chris, that's
awesome. I'm serious. $45 is I.
Hey,
would
you do ours?
I'll give you
50.
Yeah, we'll give you 50 to do the Water Zone one.
Yeah. No, it's great. It's all new, and I got some new stuff on there. Other publications streamed on the front page, so go check it out.
Okay, it's www.mavensnotebook.com. Yeah. Everybody go to it. You can be a subscriber to it. It's a great thing. We love it, and you'll love it too. So,
yeah.
Chris, thanks a lot. We'll be talking to you next week.
Yeah, travel safe on the way back, Chris.
Absolutely.
All right, will do. Take care, guys.
You're welcome. All right, we're going to take a little break for our sponsors, and we appreciate that. Sticking around for the second half. We have a great guest coming up, Mr. John Farner from the Irrigation Association. So we'll be back in just a moment.
Stay with us, folks.
Riverside, KCAA, NBCRadioNews.com.
Time to take a water break and talk some water. Irrigation. Such a refreshing topic. As more and more markets face water restrictions, your customers may be hungry, or should I say thirsty, for water-saving products? For new installations, add options like drip irrigation, controllers that respond to weather data, pressure regulating heads, or heads with check valves. They all provide easy ways to differentiate your bids and win more jobs. Or for an extra stream of revenue, offer existing customers upgrades like high efficiency nozzles, rotary nozzles, or Wi-Fi based controllers. Because when you help your customers save water, you make a world of difference for the earth and your bottom line at the same time. We'll drink to that.
If you knew there was a pipe cement that works better than the one you're currently using, is better for you and the environment, and costs the same or less, would you buy it? Well, no-brainer, right? Weldon, the trusted leader in solvent cements for over 60 years, is pleased to introduce a new line of solvent cements that does all that. Introducing the Eco Series line of solvent cements for PVC piping systems. Not only does it work great and set fast, it also has 30% lower solvent emissions and less smelly fumes, a better workplace environment when you're installing pipes. But don't just take our word for it. EcoSeries products are the only solvent cements that are Green Seal certified for environmental innovation for effective performance, improved working conditions, and for use with potable water. Now available in a medium-bodied fast-setting blue formula, 905 Eco, and a regular-bodied fast-setting clear formula, 900 Eco. Pick up a can today from your local distributor and see, smell, and feel the difference, just like Joe Sweat, president of Sunrise Irrigation, did. He said, after using Weldon's 905 Eco, we immediately noticed the application was smooth and there was noticeably less odor than other blue solvent cements on the market. The guys love it. To learn more about Eco solvent cements from Weldon, visit the website at www.weldon.com or call the technical service hotline at 877-477-8327. That's 877-477-8327.
Hey, Hey, green industry pros. Are you new to Turf Sup Radio and want to learn more? Then plug in your earphones and keep listening, because Turf Sup Radio invites you to listen while you work. Our 24/7 live radio platform keeps you up to date, bringing you new tips and interviews from pros like you who want to elevate and educate the green industry. Can't make it to industry shows or events? Don't worry. Turf Sup Radio will be there bringing you live coverage, getting you in on the action. So keep listening to Turf Sup Radio, your industry, your station.
Back.
All right. Welcome back to the second half of the Water Zone here in sunny California. Windy.
It's dark right now, but, you know, it was sunny.
Well, they don't let us out often, so I don't know. It's all dark to me. You know, I came in this morning because I'm coming against the sun in the morning, so I have my
visor,
they look like police sunglasses. Yeah. They're really dark, polarized. I come in, I go in my office. God, it's really dark in here, and I didn't realize that. I turned my computer on, and I don't know if you ever use polarized sunglasses, and you look at a computer screen.
Yeah, all the time.
There's nothing on the computer screen.
No, it
blocks it all
out. I don't have anything against sunglasses. I know it was a good party or a good night the night before when the next morning I get up and I have to wear sunglasses to open the fridge. Then I know it was a good night.
Then you know it was a good night.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, anyway, we're going to bring one of our respected guests on the show, and guy that works for the Irrigation Association, who is the premier director of government affairs, and he's going to tell us what's going on. There's some interesting things that are happening with voting for nominations for awards, and also what he's doing at the Capitol. You know, I don't know if he goes over and hears that Senate hearing or not,
right.
But we can ask him. John, welcome.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you bet, John. I hope everything's going all well with you. I guess maybe, you know, if there's a particular sequence you want to talk about things. But, you know, we've had a couple of inquiries about the D.C. fly-in, so maybe we can start with that.
Well, first, I've never been called premier before, so I feel like I'm out of China or somewhere in the Soviet Republic. You know, that's a first for me.
Oh, yep. So are you telling me that's a bad thing or a good thing?
Well, I don't know. It depends how you look at it, Rob.
I don't know. It's just
no. I appreciate you guys having me on. So we're excited. We are every year. We have folks from the irrigation industry come into Washington D.C. to advocate on behalf of the industry, and so that day is coming up in about just over a month. It's March 3rd and 4th this year. We're going to be bringing about 20, 25 industry professionals from the irrigation industry to Washington, D.C., meeting with their members of Congress, folks from the USDA, EPA, talking about the benefits of efficient irrigation, benefits of cultivated landscapes, benefits of irrigated agriculture. So it should be a very worthwhile time for us in D.C. in a few weeks. I think things will be wrapped up by then regarding the Senate stuff that's going on, hopefully at least.
Yeah, all the things that are going on right now, right?
Is there going to be any protests going on?
There's always protests going on in Washington, D.C. If the day ends in Y, the protests going on in Washington.
Well, just the experience of going to the Capitol itself. I mean, for me, John, it's been, you know, I've been there two or three times. On business, and once or twice just with my family to look around. It's always a great experience just to be there.
Did you have to testify?
No.
I'm sure, Chris, it was a different thing you were testifying on.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I'm sure it is, right?
You're right, Chris. It's always great. It's an honor to represent the industry, whether you're a professional or some hire to do so like me, and the folks you get to talk with about the issues you feel passionate about, and you know that you're trying to make good policy, stemming from that is a great thing.
Yeah. Well, it's good that you know you can go down and look straight in the guy's eye or lady's eye, and tell him what it is.
Yep.
Yeah. And because you're a professional and you live, eat, breathe it every day, and you know the ins and outs of the industry, you know how business is done. You know how water works. You know the benefits of what you do on a daily basis. The folks in D.C. know how to do policy. So you don't need to be a policy expert. You need to know what your business is and what you need in order to succeed. And it's our job to translate that into policy. And it's a good thing. It's working very well.
Yeah. So you're gonna the IA is gonna be there with the NGWA, right? The National Groundwater
Association. Yeah. Yeah. We are. You know, it's funny. I also represent the National Groundwater Association in Washington D.C. So I've been working on a lot of groundwater issues as well recently, and we joined with them on a wide variety of issues. Where we overlap is on managed aquifer recharge. Folks in California know that very well with the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act. Not all of the United States is as sophisticated as California's law is now, and we need to ensure that our nation's groundwater resources are being sustainable, are being recharged in a sustainable manner, in a responsible manner. And in some cases, let's say irrigation, in areas throughout the United States, groundwater is being replenished, recharged through inefficient irrigation. And that's not really the best way to do it. It shouldn't be the onus of the landowner or an inefficient old way of doing things to recharge groundwater. That should be done professionally and with some thought behind it. And that's really one of the messages we're bringing to Capitol Hill in a few weeks.
For a listening audience who aren't familiar with the ways of Washington, D.C., just what they see on television, you know, and I'm not trying to be funny about it, but
doesn't always paint the best portrait.
So the Irrigation Association is an important factor. We believe in it. You know, we're a founding member of that and everything. Do the representatives from the government ever pick up the phone and call the Irrigation Association and say, hey, we want your input?
Very much so. Yeah. And that goes to the expertise of the membership. I rely on that expertise. We pride ourselves on being experts at efficient irrigation. So whenever there is a policy manner coming out of Congress, coming out of the EPA, coming out of USDA, Department of Interior, even the White House, we regularly get calls from congressional offices, from policymakers and regulators asking us for our expertise in helping them figure out what best way to either create policy or regulate policy that's already been written. So it's something that we do very often, depending on what's being done in Washington. And it's not all what you see on TV. There's a lot of work being done below the surface throughout Washington, D.C., some good, some bad. But a lot of it that affects water policy and irrigation, we're a major part of that on the LG.
Go ahead, Chris.
No, I was just going to say, as well as the IA participating in the event in Washington, D.C., there's some scholarship news from the IA. If you want to take a minute or two to bring our listeners up to speed.
Uh-oh, scholarship news. I'm not aware of that, Chris. Maybe you can fill me in. I'm not really sure what that is.
All right, so there's a lot of, you know, you guys, the irrigation provides a lot of scholarships.
To
the guys. And I think if I remember right from looking at the website, and I should have printed out all these things, but so I could be reminded. But isn't the deadline coming up in a couple of weeks for you know, we have a lot of listeners that may be looking for educational help. So isn't the deadline for the applications coming up, John, I think?
What I will say is it is. And if I actually came prepared for this interview, I would know more about it, Chris. But,
No, it's okay.
That's why I said you were premier.
The deadline, I'm one step below premier, Rob. The deadline is February 15th. The deadline is February 15th. For a 2020 scholarship, and information about that is on our website, irrigation.org. These can be scholarships anywhere from $1,000 to $2,500. They're for students that are enrolled in a graduate or undergraduate 2 or 4 year institution. So if you could be going to a technical school, community college, you could go into one of the land grant universities, one of the UC or state universities in California. And it's open to any full-time student to apply. Anybody who has any kind of interest in irrigation, agricultural engineering, environmental management, landscape maintenance, landscape architecture, any kind of water management that has to do with horticulture, more than welcome to apply. But like I said, our information is on our website, irrigation.org. It's part of our workforce development initiative that we have at the Irrigation Association, where we're identifying, training, and promoting the future workforce that's coming into our industry, which is a challenge across the board. The irrigation industry is not alone in identifying who's next, who are the next leaders. Rob, Chris, myself, we're not getting any younger. It's like, who's going to be the next Rob Starr in our industry? That's what we're trying to figure out now. And this, just these scholarships are a key component on helping us to do that.
Now Rob is blushing now, John. So just yeah, just right. So you know,
I've tried many years.
That's why I said you're premier. But no, but seriously, for our listeners, one of the great things about the IA is the education portion. And I know Brent Meekham and all of your staff there. It's a first class place to get educated into all facets of water management, hydraulics, everything. And you're right. The industry is seeing a big turnover. I would say in the next year to 4 years, 5 years, there's going to be a big change in people leaving the industry. And people who are not in this business don't realize how much money or what great pay there is in this business. I mean, who doesn't want to make $300,000 a year?
I got to talk to someone.
Oh, you're not making that?
I got to talk to someone.
I should have said that. I'm sorry. No,
Toro's involved in that, John. I mean, right. We support the E3.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep, yeah, so it's...
Absolutely. And Rob, you're absolutely right. And the irrigation industry as a whole is very exciting. It's where you meet engineering and technology and efficiency and sustainability and... It all comes into one area, and it's very exciting. And we as an industry have gotten a bad reputation over time of not being being more towards the landscape maintenance side only, and going out and just mowing lawns.
Right.
And there's value in that, but the irrigation side is much more technical. A lot of math involved. It's almost like you're a water engineer.
Mm-hmm.
And the opportunities to work in this industry are endless. You could be in sales. You can be in engineering. You could be in, you could be out in the field doing work. You could be a designer, a consultant. There are opportunities across the board.
Yep.
Within this industry that are all very exciting. And you're absolutely right. Can all lead to very successful careers. Some require a 4-year degree. Many do not. Many require a two-year degree at most. Some, you only have a high school education. Regardless of what you have, there are opportunities abound for anybody that wants to get in this industry. And, Chris, I'm happy you brought up that scholarship where the deadline's in a couple weeks, because this is just one part of the way that we have an entry into exposing students to the opportunities within our industry.
Yeah, it's important to us as a company, mm-hmm. because Rob was mentioning the collective consciousness of the workforce that got into this industry in its heyday, right back in the 60s and 70s. Rob and I know those guys, and they're all getting ready to hang up the shingle and put a drink in their hand and their toes in the sand and don't blame them.
Absolutely right.
Yeah.
And Rob, you mentioned my good friend and colleague, Brent Meekham. Brent is retiring as of July 1st of this year. So we are also, Chris, you're absolutely right. The folks that we have relied upon for many, many years are retiring. And there are a lot of bright young minds throughout our industry that are making the next center pivot, the next, drip. System, the next sprinkler head, the next big thing in irrigation is coming from these bright young minds that are out there, and it's really exciting to watch all of this happen.
Well, for me as an engineer, what I like about the Irrigation Association, because I meet people who are competitors. And not the not necessarily the marketing and salespeople. I mean the engineering people. Not that I don't like marketing and salespeople. They're good.
Thank you.
They're good. Sorry, Chris. But you can have a good technical discussion without giving away everybody's proprietary information. But by bringing those groups together and those types of people together, you help solve issues. You help drive policies and things. And that's what I think the IA brings to what I get out of it. And I think it's a great source for things. I keep telling my two sons, hey, why don't you go learn about this stuff and you can have a great career. You get out what you put back into it, and I just think it's important to help promote the thing. And I urge our listeners who maybe are in their own little landscape business or They're just thinking about maybe changing their thing. You can get educated. You can get trained. You can. There's a plethora of people you can talk to when you need help. It's like a big family when you need stuff. And I think it's a great organization. And I want to see more people get involved. So the scholarships, hurry up and apply before the faucet gets turned off.
Yeah, and Rob, to bring this back to advocacy, making it full circle here, we are successful in our advocacy because of our education. There's no doubt in my mind that that's the case. When we get phone calls about, as you mentioned, setting policy, being a resource for Congress, for the administration, it's because our expertise comes from what we teach. That is our expertise.
We're not out
there being experts on every single business issue that's out there. We're not the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. We're not the National Association of Manufacturers. We're the Irrigation Association. So our expertise is how to use water efficiently without wasting it.
Absolutely.
And that's based on our education.
Yep. Hey, you got some awards coming up that you're looking for some nominations.
SWAT Awards. The SWAT Awards, So,
and let's explain to our listeners what SWAT is, because they'll think it's Hondo coming down in his car with guns.
The SWAT team coming in.
Yeah.
not a fan of the name. It's one that we live with.
Yeah.
It's Smart Water Application Technology, and this is a really, really, really cool program. This is the partnership that exists between the irrigation industry and water providers from throughout the United States. I know that California specifically, San Diego County Water Authority was at that table from day one in creating the SWAT program. Las Vegas, Sunny Nevada Water Authority was there as well, San Antonio. So it's a national program along with the Irrigation Association. And why it was created was because of this renaissance of irrigation technologies that were being developed that water providers didn't know what they were. They were hearing all of these claims being made by manufacturers that this new technology can do this, 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 and this, and water providers had never heard of before. And so water providers were saying, well, if this works, it's a great thing to rebate, to promote to our customer base, to really serve as a water conservation measure, and we want to promote it. So they came to industry and said, we need to figure this out. So about 15 years ago, got together, they started creating testing protocols. And so they started out with a weather-based irrigation, a smart controller testing protocol, moved on to soil and moisture-based sensors, and have since gone on to other technologies where we partner with water providers to develop these testing protocols that have then become water sense labels from the water sense program, or they become standards through the ANSI standard setting process.
Right.
And so they become national standards. So that was the beginning of SWAT. And what this has now become is a way that we can promote the industry. I said the industry is promoting efficient irrigation to its customer base through these water providers. We can promote these technologies. We can promote practices to the end user, to property owners, whether it's residential or commercial, through water providers. Now, water providers do great work throughout the United States. They are creating rebate programs for irrigation technologies. They are creating homeowner education on the importance and benefits of efficient irrigation. They're doing all of these things, and they are the key to their end users, to their customer base. And the Irrigation Association and SWAT got together and said, you know what? We really need to recognize these water providers for what they're doing. They're doing all this work, and we have our IA awards, which are great, to recognize industry professionals for the work they are doing, innovative work they are doing, either recently or over a span of a career, but there's no really an opportunity to recognize what water providers are doing to partner with both the irrigation industry and their end user. So last year, we created two awards. One is the Outstanding Industry Partnership Award, and that is where a water provider with programs focused on building partnerships with landscape professionals, irrigation contractors, and other professionals with irrigation responsibilities to promote outdoor water conservation. And another one is the Outstanding Public Engagement Award. And this one recognizes providers with programs focused on engaging and educating residential and commercial end users on smart and efficient technologies, best practices, and programs related to outdoor water conservation. We give these awards out during Water Smart Innovations in Las Vegas in the first week of October every year. The first year was this past year. We gave out two awards last year, and we're looking to really build up this program. And it's really, really good. It's a really great way for water providers to share their story and success and be recognized for their hard work in a way that work can be shared with other water providers so they can take what they've done to their customer base as well. So we're really excited about it.
Yeah, John, and you know, yourself, Rob, and I know that there are many well-deserving organizations out there.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah, lining up, clamoring up for this. And so it'll be exciting to so last year was the first year you had these nominations, so it'll be exciting to see this grow year over year over year.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. And information, there's two ways you can go about it. Of course, irrigation.org will bring you right in to the SWAT Awards, but the SWAT website is swatirrigation.org as well, so that'll bring you straight to the portal for SWAT. So you can, if folks are interested in seeing any of the work that the SWAT program has done with our testing protocols or with other promotional work we've done to promote outdoor water conservation through efficiency, a lot of great information on there.
Yeah. Now, speaking of great information, you, not you personally, but the IA has some excellent publications. That you can, why don't you tell some of our listeners who may not be as aware of the IA and what they have
I have not written any of them, unfortunately. I don't think you want me to write any of those publications, but we do have a lot of really good publications. I always start it when people ask about our education program and our publications. I start out by stating the fact that the Irrigation Association literally
companies want to hire people that are certified auditors or certified water managers and things. And again,
absolutely.
And people don't realize who are not in that or who are in the industry and maybe want to enter it. They're great paying jobs to have those credentials.
Absolutely. And there's different levels there too, starting out with technician up through auditing and contracting and designing. And for those folks that are looking for a professional irrigation contractor, I urge you to look for that Irrigation Association certification that really meets a pretty high level of knowledge that these folks have demonstrated. And I can assure you these folks know what they're talking about when it comes to promoting efficient irrigation and ensuring that the end user is getting what the contractor says they're going to get. These certifications are the real deal, and it's folks that are really committed to the trade of irrigation.
Right. And they're great. They're great, great courses. I know we cover every quarter. We do a training session for you guys here on the show, and people who listen get a and watch, because they can watch it also. They get a some CEUs applied to them, which is good. And we're trying to do the best we can on our side to help promote the Irrigation Association.
And we greatly appreciate it. And Your listening audience knows you guys have won the award from the Irrigation Association because of your hard work at the water zone.
And we sincerely appreciate that.
Yeah. So I know the check is in the mail for that award, I'm sure. But it's in all fears. It was very well deserved. We appreciate that partnership.
Checks in the mail.
That's right.
So how can people get more information about the Irrigation Association? Tell them, John, where they can go.
Absolutely. So irrigation.org. It's very simple. It's a one-stop shop for everything irrigation on there, the bookstore, certifications, advocacy, what we're talking about in Washington, D.C., Smart Irrigation Month, SWAT, you name it. It's all right there.
Okay. Well, we're just about entering our NBC News Hour that we have to give way to. But, John, thank you very much for coming on. We want to have you back and talk about some other things, and we'll contact you for that. And our listeners, go to www.irrigation.org. You'll find out a whole bunch of stuff. It's a great place to be. And remember, everybody.